So it's been almost 10 years to the day that I started the Sales Playbook podcast. Actually, I'm one day off. It was on May 23rd, 2010 that we dropped the very first episode. And today I want to share six lessons that I learned that I believe could help you as well. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 30,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready, because school is now in session. Okay, so as I mentioned before, we have just celebrated the 10-year anniversary of the Sales Playbook podcast. And I was rather hesitant in doing a podcast episode in the fashion of, you know, lessons learned, only because I've never been a fan of those types of posts and podcasts and everything, because I've always felt they've been kind of cliched and just, you know, opportunistic. I mean, where, you know, people, three lessons you can learn from the Academy Awards and seven things that you can learn from a worldwide pandemic. And it just, I don't know, I've just never been a fan. But I started thinking about it the other day, and I was just having some quiet thinking time, which I hope that you guys do too, because that is a really important thing for you to do. Because most of the time when I have a conversation with the sales rep who needs coaching, needs some help, and we start talking about things, they usually tell me, man, I don't even have time to think. And that's a big part of the problem that we have as sales professionals, not making the time to think. And anyway, I was sitting out there having a cigar, an adult beverage, because I had a brand spanking new bottle of whiskey, and it's not going to drink itself, ladies and gentlemen. So I was sitting out there, and I was thinking about what a journey this has been for me. And I was actually reflecting on some of the things that I learned, because it hasn't been an easy ride for me. And I figured, you know, what the hell? You know, why don't I jot them down and see if it's something worth sharing? So I've put together six lessons that I want to share with you, and I've tried to turn it into actionable advice for you, because, you know, I feel I'm not really big on the philosophical, fluffy things. I like to maybe share a lesson and then say, well, here are three things you can do, or here's an action item for you to consider. So having said that, that's a long time for me to be going on. So I just want to take you back to 2010 and where I was in my journey. And some of you are there right now in your journey. And what had happened was, about a year before, I had this epiphany that I really needed to brand myself. And the reason why for me, and forgive me if this is self-centered, at that point in time, I had wanted to write a book. I was working for a $1 billion-a-year printing company. I was a vice president, doing very well. And it occurred to me that in that environment, I was a rock star, right? Seriously. I really was doing well in that environment. Whenever we would have our annual meetings and do our training, people would be, it would be standing room only in my sessions. And I thought that was awesome. But then I realized that, well, if I'm going to sell the book to the sales force there at that company, maybe on a good day, I'll have all of, what, about 850 of those bad boys that get sold. But nobody outside of that company knew who Paul Castain was. And I realized that the world had been changing. Now, we're talking time frame now, about 2008. I was starting to really see things with people talking about LinkedIn. I was noticing technology was changing quite a bit. And I also realized that whether you and I like it or not, people are typically, as much as we Google them before an appointment and try to do a little research, they're going to Google us. And not having an online virtual trail, to me, is just as bad as having maybe derogatory things about you on a trail. People need this ability to observe you anonymously and safely from afar. And I didn't have any of that stuff. So I decided to kind of jump in, and I started the sales playbook blog, and that was November 2008. Then I got really active on LinkedIn. 2009, I started the sales playbook group over on LinkedIn and was growing that and building community there. Started my Facebook fan page, it was called back then. But I'd been listening to, in fact, this was back, it was probably about now, fast forward, about 2010, right? Right up to right around the time when I decided to start this podcast. I was listening to an interview with someone that really not too many people knew of at the time by the name of Gary Vaynerchuk. This is before he was Gary V. And so many of the things that he was saying really resonated with me. He was being interviewed, by the way, by Success Magazine and Darren Hardy back then. And they were talking about how he put out this book, Crush It. And I immediately went out and I got it. In fact, I got the audio version of it because having listened to him in this interview, I could just, the guy just reeked of energy and excitement and enthusiasm and even at times kind of raw and uncut and unfiltered. And I didn't feel I was going to get that in the book version. So I got the audio book, and I'm so glad I did, because so many times he'd say, all right, this isn't in the book, I got to go off script. And he'd give you all, it was probably like 20 bonus lessons you got from the guy. And he was talking about the importance of really showing up in the places where people want you to show up, not just necessarily based on where you wanted to be. And he started naming all these things. And I realized when he named podcasting, I realized like immediately, people tell me I have a bad poker face. I'm sure if a video was going, you'd see a very uncomfortable Paul Castain at that point. I caught myself feeling uncomfortable. I mean, it just really just came over me. I was like, oh man, because for years before that, before I had joined that company, I worked for Dale Carnegie. I worked for $500,000 a year franchise. Not half a billion. I'm sorry. I felt like kind of Dr. Evil there. Why have billions when you could have millions? Anyway, and I was very used to the traditional form of training where I could look out into the classroom and read my audience. I could see the exact moment when somebody was disconnecting. I could also see when the light bulb went off. And there was a lot of things I could do that way. And I started realizing as Gary Vaynerchuk was talking about these other areas and how they might make us uncomfortable, I realized for the first time how much I was being a wuss and how much I was avoiding these things that made me uncomfortable. To the point that in 2010, I was running a training department, one-man act, supporting 850 sales reps, and I had never done. In fact, at that point, I was working for the company, I'm guessing 3 years at that point, and I had never done even one webinar. Why? Because they made me uncomfortable. So lesson number one is facing your fears and being able to step outside of the comfort zone. So, you know, the thing that I wanted to say about this is that, and the biggest lesson that I took away from this, and maybe this is just me, but I think many times our fears amount to having an internal bully. And this was beating the shit out of me, and it was tormenting me how I wasn't willing to face this. And I knew as a sales trainer, I needed to be doing these things. And yet I thought it was silly at the same time that something like this could almost, you know, just imprison me, the fear of this. But yet getting up in front of an audience of 1,000 people didn't bother me. getting in a classroom with, I feel, the most brutal audience on earth, sales reps, and never once being afraid of that. But yet, this thing was really getting in the way of things. So I think the thing that I would offer to you there is that I think you have to look at the things that you're afraid of in your life. And, you know, there's some people that say, well, you know, to face your fears, get out and go skydiving. I'm also someone who is practical. And the idea of me, so that I, you know, maybe get ballsier or whatever, jumping out of an airplane doesn't work for me. And I'm going to tell you why. If I had to do something for a living where I was going to be up on tall buildings outside, and, you know, I'm kind of, which is true, like heights are, it's not really something I'm fond of. But then again, I'm not going to be working up on a billboard or a building or a window washer 27 stories up. So it's kind of pointless for me. So I think that there are things like that in our life that, okay, I'm afraid of that, but who gives a shit, right? But I think that there's other things in our life that you've been avoiding, I've been avoiding, that actually are holding us back from a bigger picture. So in me facing up to this thing that was scaring me and saying, well, screw it, man, I'm just going to get out there and do it, which is what I did on, what was it, May 23rd, 2010, it then gave me the confidence to fight other internal bullies. So that's what I want you to think about. Think about, well, what are your internal, and even there are external bullies too, but I think the most powerful bully is more the internal bully, because I think we make it into this giant, right? This titan. And I think you need to think about that. Think about the ones that matter to you. And then start to think about how you're going to face up to those bullies. Because what you're doing here is that you're building muscles that you're going to need to fight other battles, to ascend to new levels. So that's the first thing that I want to say. The second lesson that I learned, I call it the 52-minute opportunity. The 52-minute opportunity. And this was a huge lesson for me, because as we started getting into the podcast, I'm guessing maybe 2 or 3 years in, I just wasn't feeling any kind of momentum from it. I'm, again, facing the bully part. That's wonderful. Box checked. But 3 years in, it's like, okay, man, been fighting this bully for 3 years. I feel good. Did what I wanted to do. Like, why am I doing this podcast? Maybe there's a better use of my time. And by that point, I wasn't working for that $1 billion a year printing company anymore. I was on my own. I now had owned Castain Training Systems for 2 years. So I thought about quitting. And then I heard, I think it was Chris Brogan who was talking about this. And I think it was Patrick Flynn, but who cares, right? I digress. But they were saying how they were at some kind of an event, and they heard somebody get up and talk, and they pointed to a study, which I found a similar study, from the U.S. Census Bureau, or according to the U.S. Census, that the average person spends 52.2 minutes a day in their car. Now, right now, it's probably a little different with pandemics and COVID-19 and the world on lockdown, but it's going to be going back to that because things are opening up, which is a great thing. And what they were saying is how the podcast was a chance for you to have the most intimate visit with your audience, or in my case, my potential clients. And I thought about that. And they even gave examples how with a blog post, how much time are you really going to spend with them? Because, I mean, you could write a really lengthy blog post, but the average person is going to look at that and go, I don't have time for this. So what are we talking about? Maybe 3 minutes with something like that? You could shoot a video. The average video, how much time are you willing to spend? Would you say it's probably also about 3 minutes? And then you compare it to this opportunity to ride shotgun with someone in your audience for up to 52.2 minutes a day, man. That's pretty cool. So what this did for me was this actually helped me generate leads. It has given you guys, a lot of you guys, the opportunity to kind of test drive my methodology, my personality, my style, without laying down a dime. You could do it anonymously from a distance and safely. And you get to try it out and see if it's something for you. And I think that's kind of important. And by the way, I mentioned that phrase, I get to ride shotgun with you guys. Do you know how many times a month you guys say that to me? Seriously, I get leads all the time on my website. And a lot of the time somebody is considering me to be their coach or whatever. And one of the first questions I ask, and I think you should do that too, hey, what prompted you to reach out to me? And a lot of people say to me, hey, you've been riding shotgun with me for 3 years, 5 years. I had somebody the other day say, it might have been 9 years or something like that. It was like 8 or 9 years. And I'm saying to myself, that's incredible. I mean, that, and when you add up all those visits that we had together, man, that's incredibly powerful. So what's your action item here? Just for the heck of it, I mean, I know that a lot of you are in sales and you might shy away from the advice, hey, consider a podcast. But the timing actually might be right for you to do this. And all I want you to do is carve out that thinking time and think about, hey, is this, you know, this whole podcasting space and what Castain was saying, actually, it isn't me saying, it's, you know, according to the U.S. Census, is this something that makes sense to me? Maybe being able to tap into at least some of that 52 minutes a day thing. And by the way, when I made that decision to really stay the course with the podcast, podcasts still weren't anywhere near as popular as they became. And for once in my life, a few years later, when everybody now is starting to endorse podcasts and, you know, popularity of people like Brogan and all these other people, Rogan, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of CRISPR. I was thinking of Rogan. I'm sorry. it all of a sudden now, everybody then's jumping on that bandwagon. And I said to myself, wow, for once in my life, I'm glad I've had a 6 or 7 year head start. And also in the sales training space, there was hardly any of the thought leaders, even if I remember probably even 5 years in to my podcast, the vast majority of my competitors in this thought leader space for sales, they weren't doing this. So it was kind of an untapped market that I was in. I'm glad I had that jump start. So that was very, very helpful. The third thing that I learned, and this one is a huge thing, if you've been listening to me for a while, this will sound really familiar. And I call it the importance of the kitchen table test and your authentic voice. So the importance of the kitchen table test and your authentic voice. So the kitchen table test derived from one of my coaches, and they didn't call it that, but what they were saying to me, they were sharing with me when I was learning public speaking. They said that when you are speaking with other people, you should speak as you would at the kitchen table having a cup of coffee or a beer with somebody. I added that, and a beer with somebody, because the person who told me this was older and I didn't want to sound old. So a beer or a whiskey or having a cigar with me. But the point is that we really have to speak to people that way, because I don't know about you, but when something is very contrived and scripted and talking at someone, I shut down. I don't really, that doesn't resonate with me. And somebody speaking to me in that manner. But who doesn't enjoy a pleasant visit, right? So I realized probably it had to be even 3 years into the podcast. I realized that I was teaching this concept of a kitchen table test, putting it through the test. Hey, is this something I'd say to somebody at the kitchen table, having a cup of coffee or a beer or visiting with them? And if not, don't say the damn thing. And I was doing this in every area of my business to great success, but I wasn't doing it on this podcast. It was more scripted, and I'll explain why in a minute when we get into number four, because it was a big lesson that I learned there. But, I mean, it just wasn't happening. So I started, you know, going about it very, very differently in the way that I was communicating with you guys. And I just want to share something very, very quickly, and kind of some of my clients know this, but I've never shared this with you guys. One of the things that I do, it's very important to me with the coaching relationships that I have with my clients, that they feel like we're having a visit. Because if this biweekly call becomes something that they are just really panicked about, and they just feel that, you know, that unpleasant feeling in your stomach when you have to do something you don't want to do, they're going to shut down, and we're not going to get the results that they've hired me to get for them, to help them get anyway. And so one of the things I do during that call is I never sit at my desk, right? Now you might be thinking, wow, that's crazy. Why would you even share that with us, Castain? When I sit at my desk, I tend to be more formal, and I don't behave in the way of the kitchen table. So you might be thinking, so he goes to his kitchen table. No, I don't, because my wife would kick my ass. My kids would kick my ass. And now they can kick my ass, because I say kids and the youngest is 22. So, I mean, I really think that they would seriously beat the shit out of me if I did it. But what I do instead up here in the man cave, which is also the world headquarters of Castain Training Systems, I have my recliner. And I sit there, and I do the coaching sessions from there. I'm more relaxed. It's more of a visit. And I'm finding that the people that I'm working with respond in kind. People do respond in kind. If you're uptight, generally you're going to get somebody being uptight with you. And it just goes on and on and on. So that's one of the things that I did. So again, I think it's very important. And what's your action item? I really think that you should put all of your communication through the kitchen table test. And when I say all of your communication, you should look at your cold calling script. You should look at your cold email templates that you're using, your follow-up templates, the voicemails that you're doing. How about the format or the way that you demo your product or your solution, and put it through the kitchen table test? So that's an action item for you. The fourth lesson that I learned was the importance of simplifying your process. Now, this might be one that many of you might be inclined to say, duh. But when I tell you how much time it was costing me complicating my podcasting process, and how because of it, I was getting turned off to doing these podcasts, maybe it'll make sense, and maybe you'll see the importance of doing this in different areas of your business. So what happened was, I was spending way too much time putting together each episode. In fact, if you want specifics, it was at least the first year that I was doing this. It was probably well into the second year. I was spending an entire Saturday afternoon dedicated to this podcast, just writing out the scripts, then redoing the scripts, redoing them again, practicing again, then multiple takes, and then all the editing. And I realized, well, this is stupid. I mean, seriously, I'm not, you know, and I have to say this. Now, this may piss some people off, but it's never stopped me before. I'm not into this whole thing that a lot of podcasters do. They've got the typical picture of them with the headphones on and the boom microphone coming down. It almost reminds me of a little kid playing podcaster. Like, look at me. I got all these neat little toys. I'm going to be a podcaster. And they have all this mixing equipment, and they're all serious. I've spoken to some of them. Hey, so what kind of mixing thing are you, you know, program are you using, and microphone or whatever? And it's a short conversation because, I mean, yeah, I don't want to be a dick and not be interested in what they have to say about it. But I'm just really not interested in that conversation because I don't want to spend a lot of time on the technical aspect of my podcast. The microphone that I use, yes, I have a Yeti microphone. I don't use the damn thing. Why? Because at that point in time, it was a pain in my ass to figure it out with the computer I had. So it has been a paperweight on my desk ever since then. And I've been using, I believe it's about a $50 headset mic ever since. Why? Because I just want to do the damn thing. I don't want to spend all day learning that microphone. And you might say, hey, Mr. Teacher, Mr. Trainer, Mr. Coach, I mean, shouldn't you be going outside of your comfort zone and learning how to do it? Yeah, I probably should. But I really don't give a shit about the microphone. I give a shit about the experience for you guys. And I'm really not appealing to people selling an audio product to you where I feel this has to be perfect. So this headset microphone for $50, done. It works for me. So I think what I would, well, actually, let me tell you where I've been able to, what I've been able to do with this. I took this from taking an entire Saturday afternoon. I mean, the better part of a Saturday. I shouldn't say just Saturday afternoon. It was the better part of a Saturday. And I streamlined it down. I kid you not. To about 90 minutes, start to finish now. Seriously, I have. And if you want proof of how it comes out, this is going to be an example of it. Again, I'm not looking to quit my day job and become a professional podcaster with all the latest cutting-edge technology, perfect sound quality, where you guys are saying, hey, Castain, screw being a sales coach, man. You should be mixing other people's podcasts. I could give a shit less. Seriously, I don't want to do that stuff. So to me, down and dirty. So what I did was I started looking at other areas of my business and how I could apply this same streamlining approach. And a lot of the courses that I've created, the process of getting these launched, I have dramatically reduced the amount of time and BS involved in them. In fact, it would blow your mind how quickly I can do everything involved in launching a course, because there's a lot that's involved. I'm not going to go through everything, but I mean, in no particular order, right? I have to go and set it up on the platform that I have. All right. Then I have to go and set up the PayPal button, and then I have to go over and set it up so that it's synced, so that when you make your purchase, you get that little email that says, hey, thanks for your purchase. Here are the links. I got to do all that. Then I got to set up a sales page to promote it. Then I got to set up content to promote it. And we can go on and on and on. There's a lot of things involved in it. And my theory is, and it doesn't make me a rocket scientist, when we complicate things, it becomes easier to avoid it. In fact, I would go a step further, and I think complication of something is an avoidance activity. Deep down, subconsciously, maybe, okay, this scares the shit out of me, so I'm going to make it a big to-do, and I'm going to spend all this time on stuff instead of the actual stuff that matters. So I've done this with a lot of areas of my business, course creation. I've done it with blogging. I've really cut down the amount of time that I'm willing to spend on blogging. But my question to you is, what are some areas of your business that you might be complicating and maybe could benefit from some simplifying? It might be the manner in which you're prospecting. And heck, just quick side note, bonus tip, if you will, a tangent from me. I think on my 10th anniversary of the podcast, I'm allowed a quick tangent. And I mean, like, look at prospecting. Some of you, in order to prospect, you've got to research this like you are vetting them for the Supreme Court. And that's not practical because you're just not, I mean, you're going to hardly get any calls in. So what we want to do instead is maybe find a happy medium. So I always talk about this 3x3 rule. Set a timer for 3 minutes. Do your research in 3 minutes. And the other three in the 3x3 rule is a goal of finding three things that you might be able to work into the call, work into the cold email that you're going to send them, work into the outreach over on LinkedIn. And when you're doing this all the time, a few things happen. Number one, you get really good at finding things quickly and not dicking around and avoiding a phone call. But the other thing, too, is that you and I should be so good that we make one call and we get the appointment, get the demo, and get the business immediately, right? I mean, I wish I had that all the time. It happens, but it doesn't happen every time. Far from it. So what's going to happen? You're going to try to reach them today, and you do that research 3x3. It's a no-go. Maybe you have a note to reach out to them again next week. Guess what? Do the 3 minutes again. Now you're up to 6 minutes. Maybe you found six things. Hey, maybe you found four things, but it's four things more than you had when you started the journey. And I really want you to think about how long it usually takes you to bring in a new account. And if each time before every ounce of outreach, you were to do the 3x3 rule, by the time this thing comes to fruition, you might have 50 things you've learned. You might, at that point, have an hour and a half of research. But what's beautiful about it is you've done it piece by piece instead of missing out on other opportunities because you complicated a prospecting process. So I want you to look at your business. Where are you complicating things? Where can you simplify something? Let's go to lesson number 5. And this one is really, really important. Somewhere along the way, I've gotten away from talking about the importance of this, so I want to kind of bring it back to the podcast. You absolutely don't have to do what everyone else is doing. In fact, you probably shouldn't. Let me say this again, and this is a big lesson for me, and it's helped a lot of people that I work with. You don't have to do what everyone else is doing, and you actually probably shouldn't. So if you look at a lot of the other podcasts, and by the way, when I talk like this, I'm not putting them down. I simply don't want to be like them. Some of them would run, most of them will run circles around me. They found what works for them. But this approach, it's not going to have me showing up in my authentic voice, if you will. But you have other podcasts that have guests. I think a lot of people are sick of that shit. I like it on occasion. But it just seems that everybody is following that template for a podcast. And quite frankly, if you listen to a lot of podcasts and you say, okay, that guy, Joe Jones, I'm going to make up a name here, was on 3 podcasts and saying the same shit on 3 different podcasts, unless you get somebody who's just really good at interviewing people. And I can tell you, I'm not. And nor do I want to build up that muscle group right now. It's just, I could just think of about a dozen other things where my time would be better spent than doing that. So that's one of the things. Also, I see that, well, actually, I want to point out something about that. The other reason why I'm not big on having guests is that I want it to be an opportunity to teach you. I want to make you familiar with the methodology. I want to have that visit with you. And the other thing, again, where I see a lot of people doing the same thing, a lot of other podcasts, and I think this is a big difference, they spend too much time on the philosophical side of sales. I actually want you to have actionable takeaways. I don't want to sit here having this big, high-level, sophisticated conversation with you. Why? Because what are you going to do with that? The average person, and I see this a lot in training, feels stupid when they walk away from a conversation like that because a lot of the trainers and stuff, they're talking over the heads of the people involved. Now, I'm not saying that's because people are stupid or anything else, but it's just, you know, cut to the effing point. I mean, seriously, the philosophy is important. But okay, but here's your takeaway. Do these 3 things. Why not do that? So that's what I've chosen to do. Again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's a big lesson for me. I don't want to be like everybody else. They've done, you know, I am uniquely qualified to be Paul. And that's not Paul. That's not how I operate. That's not how I teach. But the other thing too is, and this is a big thing for me, and not wanting to be like the other podcasts, I think so many of these podcasts, especially when there are ones that have co-hosts, they take way too long to get to the point. Seriously, they do. And I used to think it's because I'm from New York and we're traditionally impatient people, but it just, oh my God, it's just, it's too much. And I do a lot of learning. I have to. If I'm going to teach, I have to stay up to date on things. So I dedicate a lot of informal time, but I have formal time that I set aside on Sunday mornings. And I get up early, put on the earbuds in, nice pot of coffee, and I am there, the humble student that we all want to be. And there I am on a podcast that, let's just say, it's 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden, I have that moment. I'm like, I find myself getting impatient. I'm like, well, geez, it's 18 minutes into the thing, and what you have done has amounted to dick. You have not given me anything. You're sitting there out trying to cute each other and saying the little soundbite phrases and talking about this and talking about that, and that's great. And there are some people who love that, but this audience that I'm trying to reach, I'm trying to appeal to the person that actually wants substance and not fluff. So I decided not to really get on that route. So, or go down that road. But now, what's your takeaway? Well, ask yourself, do I absolutely have to play out of the same playbook as everyone else? I'll give you an example of this one. This one comes with an example. When I first started doing training in a lot of the software companies that I work with, you know, I explained to them that a typical demo in that space to the typical person that they would be doing this demo to is very clinical and technical, almost too much so. Even though people want the information that way, who says that we have to show up like everyone else? Can't we put the technical stuff in there, but can't we add a little bit more personality into it? Can't we do some fun things with the slide? Like, for example, instead of having a slide with some complicated chart, I mean, at times you need it, I get it, but how about just having one graphic on a lot of the slides? And many times you could use humor in that graphic, you could do something from a movie that everybody recognizes, and you could present an analogy, or you can have fun, or a story. But either way, it's different, and that's my point. You don't have to show up the way everybody else does. Don't think because it was done that way. Hey, let's go back to something very quick. Here's going to be another tangent for you. I mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk. There's a thing about Gary Vaynerchuk that a lot of you don't realize, because it's been a long time since he talked about it. But when I listened to that interview with him back in 2010, and I just immediately was like, I was hooked. He talked about how he grew his family business. I think it was like from $4 million to $40 million or whatever, wine. And he started doing this thing back then, which, again, this is all going to sound familiar to many people. So stay with me, because there's actually something here that a lot of people don't know. But what happened was he was doing this thing, winelibrary.tv or whatever. And he would talk about different wines. He would taste them and describe them to people. And one of the things he talked about was how he didn't want to show up the same way as all his competitors out there. Wine was not cool. It was a very stuffy thing, the way that these reviewers were talking about it. They were talking in terms that the average person felt like a moron, almost like what I was telling you about some of these sales trainers talking these real technical terms, which don't mean shit to you guys. You guys want to know, how do I use this? And it was the same thing here. So instead of trying to be stuffy and highbrow, Gary Vaynerchuk would describe this stuff in funny, memorable ways. Like, he'd say to people, all right, listen, it has kind of, you know, like a fruity taste. Like, if you guys right now were to take a mouthful of Chiclets and have it with like a little bit of wine or like a little vinegary taste. That's the taste. Or he describes certain things as like blades of grass, earthy, like as if like, you know, like you were sniffing moss at the same time you were drinking this down. And he had fun with it. And obviously I didn't do it justice there because, again, Gary can do Gary best. I can do Paul Castain best. But it was a breath of fresh air. And what a lot of people, I think, don't give credit, or at least enough to Gary Vaynerchuk, is that he made wine cool again. And yes, there were people that always believed wine was cool. But when they were trying to get a review and see, all right, is this Chardonnay going to be something I really like? Or personally, I've been drinking a lot of Malbecs lately. And, you know, is this going to fit the bill? What does this taste like? Now, I know what my personality and feeble mind, if I listen to some highbrow shit description, I'm like, this isn't me. I mean, I'm not going to be there at the exclusive club in my little blue blazer with the family insignia on it and shit and, you know, have my butler, you know, purchase 20 bottles. That's not me. But yet, that's how it was being described for a while. So Gary really changed that up. And I would invite you guys to do the same thing. You don't have to show up like everyone else. In fact, I would really say that you shouldn't. Last but not least, because I kind of belabored the hell out of that point, is I think perhaps one of the biggest lessons that I learned was being willing to show up even when it appears as though nobody gives a shit. And I don't say that as a poor me thing because I've done well with the podcast. But I mean in the early days of it, I remember in the beginning, it kind of felt like nobody was listening. Or you look at your stats and you say, oh my gosh, you know, especially in the beginning, like, oh wow, 27 people. I just spent an entire Saturday and I had 27 people listen to this. And, you know, that changes over time. But then there are things along the way that pop up and it makes you question what you're doing. Like, for example, there's constantly these lists out there that people put out, top podcast lists, top sales lists, sales podcast lists that you should be listening to or whatever. And there are times when my podcasts make the list, but a lot of times, many times, the majority of the time where it doesn't. But meanwhile, you get emails from people. And they're telling you how your podcast helped or how they were hanging on by a thread and you were the one that made them go in a different direction or something you said, it could be a while ago, changed their life and set them down a different road. Even to the point that, you know, I hear things from people and they say to me, you know, Paul, I really needed to hear your message today when you were, I've had ones where I've talked about losing my dad or, you know, even being a father. And I did one a while ago. If you ever want to get into that side of the podcast, it was something like Pizza Dudes and the Meaning of Life or whatever. And in that podcast, I talked about something that actually really changed my life. And it was when my oldest was only 6 months old, had him in my arms. I was picking up a pizza. And the guy who owned the place was just had this faraway look in his eyes. And he said to me, look, I don't know you other than you coming in here and it's none of my business. But I'd like to give you some fatherly advice. He said, enjoy every moment of that little boy's life, because one day you're going to be like me and you're going to have, I think he said, one kid, you know, 26 or 28 years old and another one married off. And, you know, I kind of feel in a way like the end of, what was it, Saving Private Ryan, when right before one of the characters died, turned to Matt Damon and said and something along the lines of, you know, appreciate this, kind of like appreciate the fact that this person has been given another chance at life and people died to make that happen for him. And there is a rather dramatic moment at the end of the movie where this person is an old man and visiting that person's grave. And he says, you know, I kept my promise. I tried to be a good man. I tried to appreciate this every day. And, you know, that's what I did with that advice from this stranger. I tried very hard to appreciate every day of my children's life, their lives. And if it meant making sacrifices at work so I could go to, you know, a game that they were doing, or a play, or a musical, or whatever, or having a, you know, breaking bread with my family because we hadn't been doing it for a while, whatever, I did the best I could. And then, much like the guy in the pizzeria, guys, I woke up one day, and all of a sudden, it was like life was playing a joke on me, and I had a 26-year-old, a 24-year-old, and a 22-year-old. So, it just, you know, I was willing to kind of go down that road or whatever. So, you know, the thing that I just want to say when it comes to this is that, you know, when I would do things like that, maybe I didn't make, you know, the list of the best podcasts or whatever, but I'd get one person that's a Paul that really spoke to me today. I realized that, man, you know, my kids are growing up too fast and I want to make a change. That to me, you know, I felt like the guy at the end of that movie. So it meant the world to me. So that happens to us a lot in life, though, where we feel almost as if we're 13 years old again, and we're trying to have a conversation with the cool kids, and they go and they fluff us off. Or we're just trying to belong, and we're not, and we're awkward, and we're kind of an outsider. And I think sometimes that little internal voice, it's like that bully again I talked about, it starts telling us things. Oh, maybe you should just stop. Maybe you shouldn't do it. I had that voice go off, that little voice in my head, several times, saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't do this. And this was a few years ago. And then I realized, you know what? Screw you. I have a mission. I have a message that I want to say. It's not going to appeal to everyone. You are not going to make every list out there. You might not make any of them or whatever. But if you can stand behind the work, who gives a shit, right? And I will tell you, though, it's the nicest feeling when you've had those thoughts. And then one day you wake up and you realize that I've gone the distance. I've been able to go 10 years. And as of this episode, 288 episodes. Now, what does that have to do with you? I want you to look at the things that maybe make you feel uncomfortable. Maybe you've taken a stab at certain things. And it's not just things like a blog or a podcast. You've made a go at something. Maybe it's even, I don't know, maybe you're on LinkedIn. And you realize you're not one of the cool kids. Not everybody is, you're getting like hardly any views, hardly any likes or shares or comments. But we're not doing it for that. And that would be wonderful if we could be the most popular person with the podcast, with the blog, over on LinkedIn, in our own organization. We're doing it for the one person that we get through to. And that plays into so many things that we do. So the final lesson is more really for you on a personal level, that there are probably things in your life that you've tried. You went out there and you got your ass kicked and you ran away from it and you hid. And I've done it. I'm not sitting here casting judgment. I know that all too well. I've done that a lot. Earlier part of my life, that was a big part of it. Maybe there are some things that it made sense to run and live to fight another day, so to speak. But there might be other things that you're really missing out. Like, for example, if I chose to run away from this podcast, right now, me and you wouldn't be having this moment where I'm talking to you. And some of you, maybe this is resonating with you. It never would have happened. If I chose to run away from LinkedIn because I wasn't one of the cool kids, maybe I wouldn't have been able to get that message across to the one person who needed to hear it. Or even, sorry, call me, you know, a money hoe. But, you know, maybe I wouldn't have gotten the business that I've got. I've gotten a tremendous amount of business from over on LinkedIn and from this podcast and other places. So the final lesson is, I really want you to look at the places where maybe you've given up, and maybe you've given up a little bit too soon. Maybe it was a dream you had and you decided to give up on it. Maybe it was, okay, you know what, at the beginning of the year, you're like, I'm going to get out there and start doing more cold calls and doing all these things. And then all of a sudden, what happens? What, 3 months into the year? A pandemic. And a lot of you guys ran and hid, and I get it. But maybe it's time to come out and say bullshit. You know, you want to fight? Let's go. Maybe bloody the knuckles a little bit. So that's my message for you today. It wasn't anything real, real elegant. But I felt that I had to say something to you when we hit 10 years, and I thought the best use of that time together was to talk about, well, what were some lessons that I've really pulled from this? And I will tell you something, I wouldn't change anything for the world. I wouldn't give this up for the world. I like having this time with you guys, and I'm going to continue doing it as long as I'm able to do it, which I hope is a long freaking time. Either that or when I have a lower tolerance for bullshit. Then I think I'm going to stop it. But I'd have to be pretty rich in order to do that. So I think we're good for a while, unless you guys make me rich. But anyway, folks, with that, I'm Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come visit our blog at yoursalesplaybook.com/blog.